Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. About 25 years ago, a new sound began to creep into the rock music world. Actually, it was a combination of two older sounds, two sounds that you might have thought were incompatible. On the one hand, you had softly sung, dreamy vocal harmonies. On the other hand, you had a squall of distorted electric guitars. The band called My Bloody Valentine found an interesting way to combine the two. Style became known as shoegaze. It would bloom, flower, and disappear in the early 90s. But now, My Bloody Valentine is back, and some people are talking about shoegaze again. And others are wondering what this first group of people are talking about. What kind of word is that? What does it mean? All of those questions will be answered later in the Soundcheck Guide to Shoegaze. Also coming up on the show, live music from the New Orleans band Hooray for the Riff Raff, led by Alinda Lee Segarra, who grew up here in New York but then surreptitiously made her way down south by hiding out on freight trains. We'll ask her about that and hear some of the band's new album later on the show. But first...
Oh, how many travelers get weary, bearing both their burdens and their scars.
To music fans, the idea of the lost album can be intoxicating, but many new releases that are touted as lost albums end up being collections of B-sides, outtakes, and demos. That is not the case with the new album called Out Among the Stars by the late Johnny Cash. He recorded it in 1981 and 1984 during the final years of a contract with Columbia Records. Now, that period was not a high point for Cash, creatively or personally, and his career revival of the late 1990s was many years off. But Out Among the Stars reveals a lot about the man in black. John Carter Cash is the son of Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash and co-producer of Out Among the Stars. John, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me. What a blessing to be here.
Definitely. Wow. What an extraordinary find this is. A complete album.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not odds and sods.
No, it's master recordings.
Yeah. So how was this album lost to begin with?
Well, Columbia Records wasn't that interested in Johnny Cash at the time. But in 1984, which is the majority of the material was recorded then, my dad, I mean, he was at a great point in his life. Because in the early 1980s, 82, 83, he'd gone through some dark periods. He relapsed into drug addiction. And in late 83, he went through the Betty Ford Center. And while he was there, he wrote this song called I Came to Believe. It was about turning his life over to a higher power. It was his introduction there to the 12-step world and whatnot. When he got out of that that recovery center, early 84, and his life settled back down, and he got reacquainted with his family, and we all came closer together in so many ways, he achieved a prime in spirit. And 10 out of these 12 songs were done during that year.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard this the first time, again, after all these years, because I remember being in the studio a little bit when I was a kid. But when I heard this the first time after all these years, suddenly I was back in contact again with my best friend.
Yeah.
Because that's who he was. So it was a very personal thing.
There's a photo in the liner notes of you and your dad.
Yeah.
With the headphones.
With the headphones around both of our heads, yeah, and close together.
So you knew this album was out there?
Well, you
somewhere?
Know, it's not something that I'd thought that much about. Now, when I heard it again, I remembered being in the studio the day that that Waylon Jennings walked in. And I remembered them recording the song I'm Moving On, the Hank Snow classic, that is on this record.
Mr. Fireman, won't you please listen to me, cause I got a pretty mama in Tennessee. Keep moving me on, keep rolling on.
So shovel the coal and let's just rattle and roll and keep moving on.
So I remembered that. My mother and father sang Baby Ride Easy live on stage for years in the early 80s. And they had the vision that that song, Baby Ride Easy, could be a big hit for them. And it's great. I mean, it is. You know, I mean, the energy is there. The spirit's there. And to me, I mean, it's as powerful as Jackson in my own mind.
Well, to me, that song, Baby Ride Easy, it sounds like an attempt to redo If I Were a Carpenter.
Yeah.
You know, the opening,
yeah.
If I Were a Truck Driver, yeah, and I Were a Waitress, and I Want a Coffee, and I Poured You Some.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's give people a chance to make up their own minds. Here's a little bit from the Lost album by Johnny Cash called Out Among the Stars.
If I drove a truck
and I were a waitress,
and I ordered coffee,
and I poured you some,
then you'd stop by on your way sometimes later,
and if we arm wrestled, I'd see that you won.
I, my baby, ride easy, ride high in the saddle all day.
If your lovin' is good
and your cooking ain't greasy,
we'll chuck the chuck wagon and we'll ride away. If I were a waitress, some pale senorita,
and I a bullfighter way down in the sand,
while the band kept on playing that old Cassidore,
would you throw me a flower?
Would you take my hand?
A little bit of Baby Ride Easy, Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash, and a duet from the newly released Lost album by Johnny Cash called Out Among the Stars. John Carter Cash, the son of Johnny and June, is with us in the Soundcheck studio, co-producer of the new album. So your dad goes through this really tough period in the early 80s, comes back, he's in a much better place. You mentioned the song I Came to Believe, which he wrote. Was he still in?
He was in Betty Ford Center when he wrote that song. Yeah, and it was recorded later on in his life when he was working with Rick Rubin for the American Recording Series.
Right.
And it was on one of those records. But this is the first recording of it, you know. And I mean, I don't know, it's personal for me. You know, it is. It's a reconnection.
As it obviously was for him, too.
Yeah.
I mean, and this really is the most personal song on the record. It's called I Came to Believe.
I couldn't manage the problems I brought on myself, and it just made it worse when I laid them on somebody else. So I finally surrendered it all, brought down in despair. I cried out for help, and I felt a warm comforter there. And I came to believe in a power much higher than I came to believe that I needed help to get by.
Johnny Cash, and I Came to Believe. John Carter Cash with me on Soundcheck. That's on the newly released album, the rediscovered album called Out Among the Stars, one of two songs that your dad wrote.
Better on the record,
So did you know that you were even looking for... How did you find this record?
Well, my parents, I mean, they had trouble ever throwing anything away. They were collectors. Mm-hmm. And I won't say that they were hoarders, but they were pack rats.
I noticed the distinct... I could see your internal editor working there.
Yeah, it was never...
How am I going to finish this sentence?
It was never messy. I mean, my office is messy. But it was never, you know, a mess. But they really... They kept most everything. And through the years, they gathered all kinds of stuff. There was a... in their storage facility, in their office, when they passed away, I had to go through all these things. There was like a camel saddle from Saudi Arabia. There were wax figurines of all the presidents of the United States. I mean, just various objects of bizarre nature, or, you know, spiritual, you know, importance, or, I mean, old Bibles. I mean, all kinds of stuff. But within this storage facility, there were hundreds and hundreds of audio recordings, 2-inch reels and mixtapes, you know, 1/2-inch reels and 1/4-inch reels, and just, I mean, an amassment of things. Mm-hmm. We found the original 8-track recordings of the Johnny Cash Show, the live television show.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes at the end of the night, after the live show, they just keep playing and recording some. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that people haven't heard.
But and anyway, 8-track anyway, recordings, so they probably yeah. sound pretty good.
Yeah, they sound really good. Yeah, oh. And then also there's a whole... There was an amassment of music that my dad did in the 70s, just him playing the guitar and singing, which was a lot like the very first American Recordings record. Now, that's been released. That was the personal file that came out on Sony Legacy a few years back. We took all of the reels and we shipped them up to New York to Legacy, which was – I had to bite my fingernails to let them go, you know, okay – I trust you guys, you know, and but they transferred everything to digital, working with Greg Geller, Steve Berkowitz, and the guys there at Legacy. They transferred everything and cataloged it all and then shipped the original tapes back to me. But 2 years ago, specifically, we found these recordings, and they just stood out as being, to me, a good Johnny Cash record in its diversity. Made honest statements about my dad's life and who he was, you know, the spontaneity that was there on the record, the fun, the energy, the laughter, which I think is missing from a lot of Johnny Cash stuff.
And it is a kind of a time capsule, you know, as you were alluding to before. This is the sound of country music circa 1984.
Yeah, circa 1984. So, I mean, you're going to get that. I mean, it's you know, it's very true. But in its own way, it's, you know, it's so timeless to me. It's great to hear it now.
Some great songs on the record. And, mm-hmm. I mean, right out of the box, track one, the title track.
The title track. Yeah, which, you know, Out Among the Stars can... You know, it being the title to me, it means, you know, so much, you know, it can mean different things. Of course, you know, my father, maybe he's watching from Out Among the Stars, hopefully. But then again, you know, this song itself, it's a tragedy. It's, you know, it's a powerful song. It lends a powerful message. And it's a story song, which you don't hear that much of. And you didn't hear that much of even back then in the early 80s song, but not as much.
And a very keenly observed little slice of life from the writer Adam Mitchell.
Yeah.
And performed by the one and only Johnny Cash.
It's midnight at a liquor store in Texas. Closing time, another day is done. When a boy walks in the door and points a pistol, he can't find a job, but Lord, he's found a gun. He pulls it off with no trace of confrontation. Then he lets the old man run out in the street. Even though he knows they'll come with guns a-blazing, already he can feel a great relief. Oh, how many travelers get weary, bearing both their burdens and their scars. Don't you think they'd love to start all over?
That is Johnny Cash from the Lost and Found album called Out Among the Stars. That is the title track. The album was recorded in mostly in 1984, a couple of tracks in 81. John Carter Cash, the son of Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash, found the record as co-producer of the new album. So how much did you have to do with these tapes once you found them?
Well, when my co-producer on the mix, Steve Berkowitz, and I got together, and the great Billy Sherrill is completely retired from the music business.
He's the original producer.
Yeah, the original producer. But when Steve Berkowitz and I got together and listened to this music, there were holes. I mean, there were things missing. There were guitar solos missing. There would be an electric guitar, but no acoustic guitars where there probably might have been one had they finished these tracks. And of course, it begged us both to go, why didn't they finish it? But still, you know, they moved on. And my dad did creatively.
Why didn't they finish
it? Well, Dad, he would move on from one thing to the next to the next. And Columbia was losing interest. They dropped my dad, you know, right after this. But we were inspired, you know, if we're going to finish this record, what do we do? Do we go straight. What we decided to do is go straight to the source and go as close to as we could to the heart. We called Marty Stewart, who played on the original recordings that were
the guitarist. Done.
Yeah, play the guitarist and the mandolin player on the original stuff. There were other guitar players too, great ones, wonderful musicians all over the record. But we asked Marty, you know, hey, would you like to come back in and replace your guitars? And so Marty actually came into my studio there in Hendersonville, Tennessee, which is the Cash Cabin Studio, which is where my dad did so much of his recordings with Rick Rubin. And Marty replaced his guitars and his mandolin. So it was sort of like coming back around for, you know, full circle.
But the point was not to change the overall
sound of those original songs. We didn't want to. We wanted to stick with, I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
You know, why change it? I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, it was done by a master with master musicians. I mean, you got Kenny Malone on the drums, who still actually I still work with Kenny some, and you know, Pig Robbins on the piano and Pete Drake. I mean, all these great musicians that were on the original recording. So you didn't have to replace any of that.
Yeah.
But you know, it wasn't. There was a few things that we did subtract here and there, but not much. You know, we tried to stay true. There's one song where there's a lot of new music, and there's only one. You know, it's the Don't You Think It's Come Our Time is more of a bluegrass Appalachian kind of feel now, and originally wasn't that way. But for the most part, the record is in place as it was originally produced.
There is one major exception to that, which is a version of She Used to Love Me a Lot. Let me play for folks the version that your dad recorded.
Uh-huh.
And then we can talk about what happens to it when Elvis Costello gets his hands on it. This is the original from the Johnny Cash album called Out Among the Stars.
She used to love me a lot. I sat down beside her and she smiled. She said, where have you been? It's been a while. Was glad to see me, I could almost read her thoughts. She used to love me a lot.
So that's the original version of She Used to Love Me a Lot.
Yeah, that's the record mix, which we sort of called the haunted version. Yeah.
So what did you do with it?
Well, Steve Berkowitz and I were talking, and we were like, because we were back and forth on two mixes. So we settled on the one, and then we said, well, why don't we go even farther out then? And let's call an old friend who was a dear friend of Steve's and a friend of mine and the family's for years. And he was a friend of my dad's back in the early 80s, and had actually worked with producer Billy Sherrill, and that man is Elvis Costello. We called Elvis and asked him if he would be interested to do a mix, and he was excited to produce a unique mix. And we said, why don't you just go for it? Just do whatever you feel, you know, that your heart leads you to do with this song. And the result is sort of magical.
It's a kind of a bonus track on the album by Johnny Cash, the recently rediscovered Out Among the Stars.
She used to love me a lot. I sat down beside her and she smiled. She said, where have you been? It's been a while. She was glad to see me. I could almost read her thoughts. She used to love me.
Elvis Costello produced that arrangement of She Used to Love Me a Lot.
Yeah,
I mean, John, it just kind of shows a good song stays a good song.
Oh, yeah, it does.
I mean, those are two radically different approaches.
Well, that's it, and the man singing it, that's, you know, that really is what matters. My dad would hold a little 57 microphone, which is just a little cheap, you know, $125 microphone, sing into it. He'd sound just as good as he would through a $10,000 microphone. You know, that's the magic.
We're speaking with John Carter Cash, the son of Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash. He's a co-producer of the new album, Out Among the Stars, an album that his dad recorded in the early 80s and is being heard for the first time ever. Not a collection of outtakes or demos, a genuine record that was made, almost completed, never released.
Right. Yeah.
Is there more stuff like that out there?
There is. There is more music. There are more complete records out there.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, it's got to be just right. It has to fit certain criteria. And it's got to be something that in my heart and that the trust that we feel is what he would do. something that he would want, you know, released. And this fits that criteria. There will be other things coming out, but we're really taking our time.
All right. Well, the current one is called Out Among the Stars. And John Carter Cash, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here, John.
Mama, I guess you heard I got married in Tennessee. I got a blue-eyed girl who thinks the world of me.
Up next, live music from the New Orleans-based band called Hooray for the Riff Raff. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The New Orleans-based group called Hooray for the Riff Raff is led by Alinda Lee Segarra, a singer-songwriter who actually grew up about 10 miles from the WNYC studios. We first heard about the group back in 2012 when they released an album called Lookout Mama, an album that led NPR music critic Ann Powers to list them as her favorite new band of 2012 on Soundcheck's year-end survey. Now, Hooray for the Riff Raff has a new album out. It's called Small Town Heroes, and today I'm joined by Alinda Lee Segarra and fiddler Yossi Perlstein, who are going to play a couple of songs off of that new record for us. This one's called Blue Ridge Mountain. It's the band Hooray for the Riff Raff, live on Soundcheck.
Mountain, and my head an overflowing fountain. Oh, my heart is a Blue Ridge Mountain, but I never, never knew, I never knew, never knew, never, never knew, never knew. Well, I woke up this morning and I saw a new day dawning. Oh, I woke up this morning, but I never, never knew, I never knew, never knew, never, never knew, never knew.
That's Hooray for the Riff Raff, live on Soundcheck. The song's called Blue Ridge Mountain, and it's from their latest album, Small Town Heroes, that, of course, a live performance. The members of the band here with us today, Alinda Lee Segarra, the singer, songwriter, and guitarist, and Yossi Perlstein playing the violin. Alinda, that's pretty convincing Blue Ridge Mountain stuff from a girl from the Bronx.
Yeah, I learned a lot about music when I was just traveling around in the North Carolina area, you know, in Appalachia. So I feel like it's definitely influenced me a lot. And definitely Yossi's fiddle playing, too. So,
well, I was going to say, a lot of the fiddle stuff sounds very traditional, almost as if you had just kind of like stolen it from some old folk dance tune or something. How did you, when you were traveling around the Carolinas, Were you backpacking? Was this on the train? How were you doing that?
It was backpacking, I guess you could say. We had backpacks. a lot of hitchhiking around, just, you know, kind of trying to be Woody Guthrie as much as possible.
Right. And, of course, there's so much great stuff in that part of the, you know, the Piedmont blues, which are different from the Delta blues.
Yeah, for sure.
But the story is that you started in the Bronx and you eventually wended your way to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Much of it via train, right? You did the hobo thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Well,
yeah.
And people are going to think, what's he saying hobo for? It's not the 1930s. But that term is still used by people who ride the rails.
Yeah, I would say people are still proud to call themselves that, mm-hmm. I would say.
And the 20th century American composer, Harry Partch, who the guy who invented all these weird instruments, was a hobo and rode the rails.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yep. So there, you know. There have been musicians who've done this before you
as
well.
Yeah, definitely.
What is that like? I mean, is it still like, you know, people think of 1930s films and stuff like that?
You definitely feel like you are outside of society, for sure. You're not very in touch with the average day of the average working person, I guess. When I was doing that, it was a number of years ago, so I didn't have a phone and I wasn't really like tapped into our like technological age, you know.
And that was by choice?
Yeah. I felt like at that point I was really trying to find myself, and I thought that was the best time to do it. You know, I didn't really have anything holding me down, so I thought that if I was going to take the opportunity, I should do it right then when I was really young, you know.
Heck of a way to see the country, too.
Yeah.
Did you absorb stuff? Did that come out in the songwriting?
Oh, for sure. I'd say so. I think Yossi could say that, too. We just have met a lot of really amazing people and heard a lot of really amazing music. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the way that I think both me and Yossi learned how to play was from people directly, not so much from records or anything, you know. Like in North Carolina, when I learned to play banjo, I was taught directly by people at old-time jams and stuff, so...
Mm-hmm. So you did kind of come to this style of music pretty naturally. It's
yeah,
the oral
so.
Tradition.
Yeah, and it really spoke to me when I went to the South for the first time. I felt like the music really spoke to me, and I felt like it really suited my voice, and just my songwriting style started growing from there. So
coming from the Bronx, that...
I'm not so good at rapping.
And when you got to New Orleans, what made that seem like the place to... stop and settle down.
It's a really welcoming musical community. They're really welcoming to beginners also, I'd say. And there's a really big street music scene there.
Of course, it's
a really great way to make some money if you're a musician. And you can also gig every night if you want.
Although we think of New Orleans, we think of, you know, the jazz scene, old-time jazz, some more modern stuff. And, of course, they have a great hip-hop scene. Is there a folk music scene there as well?
It's definitely growing, for sure. I'd say in the time that I lived there, I've seen it grow a lot. There's a lot more emphasis on songwriting, and a lot of people are using the old forms that they know so well to make new songs. I think that's really great to keep the city going.
We're speaking with Alinda Lee Segarra, the singer and songwriter behind the band Hooray for the Riff Raff. Where does that – who are the Riff Raff?
We are.
What was that, Yossi?
We are.
So this has been a kind of variable band for a while. Is it pretty much set now?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yossi's been my right-hand man for a while, or my partner in crime, as I like to call him. But it's basically, you know, it's instead of using my name or Yossi's name, it's just a band name, but... When we play live, normally we have a bigger band. We like to mix it up a little bit.
Well, it's you and Yossi here in the Soundcheck studio today. You want to do the title track from the new record?
Sure. I'll do Small Town Heroes.
All right. It's a live performance by Hooray for the Riff Raff, live on Soundcheck.
She was the queen. She got all her drugs for free. She walked up to her daddy's door. He said, "You don't live here." And She wanted love, wanted love. Oh, but she just couldn't get enough. Just couldn't get enough. Enough. Well, all these people and all these things, now what's the point in a wedding ring? 'Cause we might not be here when next year comes. Oh, I guess you gotta watch your back and carry a gun. Oh, baby girl, where did you go? I threw you out where the cold winds blow. Are you in Vidalia? Good mom, I just couldn't watch you stick it in your arm. You wanted love, wanted love. Oh, but I just couldn't give enough. Enough. And from the boogie down to Bowling Green, I rode the night train to infinity. Well, I tempted fate and I acted smart. Oh, I grew some callous on my heart. I wanted love, wanted love. Oh, but I just couldn't give enough. All these places, yeah, all these towns. Now what's the point in settling down? 'Cause we might not be here when next year comes. So you better live it like you're on.
That's called Small Town Heroes by the band Hooray for the Riff Raff, off of their new album, also called Small Town Heroes. Let's hear another one. This song is called The Body Electric, live on Soundcheck.
Said you're gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river. Shoot me down, put my body in the river, while the whole world sings. Sing it like a song. The whole world sings like there's nothing going wrong. He shot her down, he put her body in the river. He covered her up, but I went to get her and I said, my girl, what happened to you now? I said, my girl, we gotta stop it somehow. Ooh. Ooh. sick and sad. Tell me, what's a man with a rifle in his hand gonna do for a world that's all gone mad? He's gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river, cover me up with the leaves of September like an old sad song. You heard it all before. Well, Delia's gone, but I'm settling the score.
That's called The Body Electric from the band Hooray for the Riffraff. Represented here in our studio today by Alinda Lee Segarra on vocals and guitar and Yossi Perlstein on violin. So, Alinda, that's kind of a meta take on the murder ballad tradition, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my response, I guess, to the history of murder ballads. I feel like there's been a lot of really amazing ones in the past that told these really beautiful but tragic stories. But I felt like in more recent times, they've been used more as a, you know, like a really kind of something to get a rise out of the audience and be a little edgy. And I felt like we were really separating ourselves from the messages in those songs. And I felt like so often they were about killing women that I thought maybe a woman should speak up a little bit and be like, hey, that's me you're talking about.
So the narrator here is keeping score.
Yeah, yeah.
As she almost says, word for, you know, Delia's gone, but I'm settling the
yeah.
score. So the idea of, you know, modern murder ballads as opposed to old ones. I mean, old ones, mothers killed sons,
yeah,
and sisters
exactly.
killed each other. But now it's mostly guys killing girls.
I would say so. I'd say that it was more of my personal feeling about them. I'd say I was just thinking a lot about reading the newspaper and seeing so much violence against women in our times and in our everyday life, that I thought that our musical world should be a place that we could escape to and have some kind of safety for women as opposed to hurting them there, too.
and a little agency as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The band Hooray for the Riffraff has a new album out called Small Town Heroes. Alinda, Yossi, thank you so much for playing for us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we bring you the official soundcheck guide to shoegaze. Find out where the genre began, where it went, and what it sounds like next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This influential Anglo-Irish band, My Bloody Valentine, created a modern classic with their 1991 album Loveless. Then they disappeared for over 10 years. But the sound of that album continued via dozens of other bands who came under its influence, all of which got lumped together under the not very helpful name shoegaze. Now, recently, MBV, My Bloody Valentine, has resurfaced, and so has the shoegaze sound in a number of recent releases. So,
It's high time for one of our soundcheck guides, and joining me here in the studio is the writer Tom Hawking. You can read his take on shoegaze on soundcheck.org, and he's here with today's soundcheck guide to shoegaze. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
So we'll, as we do with these soundcheck guys, we'll run through some of the basics, hear some deep cuts, maybe even a track better left unheard. But tell us first where this comes from.
Well, shoegaze is a sound that originated in the late 80s, early 90s in Britain. It grew out of psychedelic rock and also out of, I think, a lot of the records that came out on 4AD in the mid-80s.
4AD record label, yeah.
Yeah, like Dream Pop, this very kind of hypnotic, immersive sound. But I would say that shoegaze really started with the first My Bloody Valentine record, which was called Isn't Anything. And it has a really interesting synthesis of very harsh kind of, you know, almost distorted, unpleasant guitar sounds, yeah, and really pretty melodies.
So is that one of the, is that the sort of the basic defining characteristic of shoegaze? Is this?
I would say so, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And we hear it right away in action in the very first album by My Bloody Valentine called Isn't Anything.
Touch your head, then your head, softer, softer everywhere. Fingertips are burning, can I touch you there? Soft as velvet, eyes can see. Bring me close to ecstasy. Higher into heaven, and I'm coming to.
Song's called Soft as Snow But Warm Inside, 1988 album by the band My Bloody Valentine. And the album called Isn't Anything was their debut. It would be followed up by Loveless, which, yep, Tom, is considered sort of the masterpiece of the genre still these days.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty
and
much.
And the harsh, distorted guitar sounds, you just get like a wall of them by the time they get to Loveless.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's a sort of a latter-day equivalent of Phil Spector's Wall of Sound, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this huge kind of crushing volume.
Now, there were some bands before My Bloody Valentine that, in retrospect, you could... the Jesus and Mary Chain,
yep,
for one. But you could probably go all the way back to the Velvet Underground, couldn't,
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you totally could. Lou Reed tuned his guitar all in D once and just, you know, played a massive kind of drone that definitely you can hear in these sorts of bands.
So where does the term shoegaze come from?
It came from the NME, I believe, at
the New
time.
Music Express,
yeah,
in London.
And was originally a way of kind of disparaging these bands, that they just stood there and gazed at their shoes and did nothing on stage. But they kind of adopted it as a mark of pride, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was that they didn't want to be demonstrative and rock stars. They just wanted to play this music, which was immersive in its own right.
Well, and I suppose it wasn't that they were gazing at their shoes. What were they really gazing at when they were looking at the floor?
Their pedals.
The pedals, the effects pedals that,
yep,
created all,
absolutely,
the waves of distortion. So shoegaze, very much a media formulation, like all of the isms that have come in music before,
indeed,
except
indeed,
that this time the musicians sort of grabbed onto it.
Yeah, I think, you know, as with all genre descriptors, they had a pretty ambivalent kind of relation to it. Like, some bands kind of embraced it, some bands didn't,
yeah,
like it and would prefer not to be called it, but yeah.
All right, so Tom Hawking here with us, senior editor at Flavor Wire, where he writes about pop music and culture, and he's here with the soundcheck guide to shoegaze. So let's talk about some of the other kind of formative bands,
mm-hmm,
in the genre. Who is Ride?
So Ride were another band who came very much at the start of, I guess, what you'd call the shoegaze wave.
And this is late 80s, early
90s? This is late 80s. Their first album, and their best one, I think, was called Nowhere. It came out in 1990. They made three other albums, and as with the shoegaze movement in general, I think they kind of lost focus. So, yeah, their best record is definitely their first one.
And do we hear that My Bloody Valentine's
influence?
We do, influence.
Yeah. I chose this one because it does sound a lot like My Bloody Valentine. It's got a similar harsh kind of guitar sound, but also a similar really lovely melody under it.
The song is called Polar Bear from the band Ride.
Why should it feel like a crime?
song is called Polar Bear from the 1990 album Nowhere by the English band Ride. Another example of early shoegaze music. Tom Hawking here with the Soundcheck Guide to Shoegaze. You said, Tom, that the movement sort of lost focus as the 90s progressed. So where would the bookends be for the shoegaze period?
I would say the beginning would be the 87, 88, mm-hmm. and the end of it came 92, 93, around then.
So not that long a
run. No, it was a pretty short-lived movement, honestly. I think in England it was kind of overtaken by Britpop, where you had these very charismatic singers and intelligible lyrics and pretty much everything that shoegaze didn't have, bless it.
Right.
And
so bands like Oasis.
Yeah, exactly. Suede.
And in fact, Oasis, there's a connection to
yes.
the band we just heard.
Yeah, indeed. Andy Bell, who was in Ride, ended up playing bass in Oasis,
mm-hmm.
which is... it's kind of sad, to be honest.
But so a short run, but a very long tail.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very long influence.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then there's been a resurgence of interest in it of late with the movement that people are calling New Gaze.
All right. But let's back to the original shoegaze bands. You also picked a group called Chapter House. Now, this is 1991,
yes.
so we're getting towards the end of the... But this is also when Loveless came out.
Yeah, definitely.
The acknowledged masterpiece in the style.
Yeah, I think it's not unusual for a movement to kind of peak and start declining at the same time, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter House are interesting because this is very much what you'd call the quintessential shoegaze sound, I think. It doesn't have the harsh edges that that the early My Bloody Valentine stuff has. It's... It has the same immersiveness, but it's a lot softer, warmer kind of sound. Mm-hmm. And this album really didn't do very well, and I don't know why, because it pretty much encapsulates everything that people liked about shoegaze, but I think perhaps it just arrived too late.
1991, the album Whirlpool, well, it would have been up against the My Bloody Valentine album, Loveless.
Yeah, indeed.
But let's hear from Chapter House in a song called Breather. Chapter House from their 1991 album Whirlpool and a song called Breather. So again, Tom, we have that classic shoegaze combination, these very lush, dreamy, pop-style harmonies
yep.
buried in a mix
yep.
of this kind of wall of electric guitar sounds.
Absolutely, yeah.
All done with various effects pedals and stuff like that.
Lots of reverb.
So can we say that's like one of the deeper cuts, you know?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think Chapter House are one of these bands that shoegaze nerds appreciate,
right.
But if you ask the man on the street to name, a couple of bands from that movement, I think Chapter House probably wouldn't be at the top of the list.
Let's get away from England. At what point does shoegaze happen in America?
That's interesting because shoegaze, I think, was originally influenced by American bands. Like in his book, A Band Could Be Your Life, Michael Azarad talks about Dinosaur Jr. Mm-hmm. touring England and they have a very similar mix of, very harsh kind of guitar sounds and poppy kind of melodies.
And again, it goes back to the Velvet Underground.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that shoegaze never really took off on this side of the Atlantic, I don't think. Or not the first time around, anyway, because a lot of the kind of newer shoegaze bands these days are definitely American. But there was the occasional band, and Medicine was one of them. They were really great, and the guitarist, Jim Putnam, actually went on to form Radar Brothers, who were one of my all-time favorite bands, so...
Mm. But Medicine, from 1992, they had this album called Shot Forth Self-Living.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually back, aren't they?
Yes,
back
indeed
on the
they
scene.
Are. Yeah. Yeah, they reformed last year, I think.
And, of course, so did My Bloody Valentine
indeed.
With their new record that came out in 2012. The first generation of shoegaze is now the second generation of shoegaze. But this is from that 1992 album by the American group called Medicine. band is Medicine, a song called Aruka from their 1992 album Shot Forth Self-Living. Medicine is actually back in business, shoegaze band based here in the States. Tom Hawking, senior editor at FlavorWire, has written about shoegaze. You can read his take on the subject at soundcheck.org, and he's here helping us present our soundcheck guide to shoegaze. This band was actually known in some circles as the American My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
Because of that combination, the harsh distortion of the guitars. And then again, this kind of lovely kind of pop harmony thing.
Yeah, you can definitely hear the similarities. Yeah. I think it's always a bit reductive to say a band is the American so-and-so or vice versa. But
yeah,
there's definitely a comparison to be made.
And you know, even today, now you talked about new gays, even today there are bands like in Scotland, the Twilight Sad, basically a bunch of guys who obviously had those My Bloody Valentine records and spent some time figuring out how did they make those sounds.
I mean, I'd love to know, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no disrespect to the Twilight Sad.
No,
who,
I mean,
who I like a lot.
Definitely.
But this stuff can get kind of noisy. So
is there
a point beyond which you're out of the realm of shoegaze and into the realm of noise rock?
Sure, there is. Exactly where that line lies is, you know, probably pretty nebulous. I mean, if you go to one of the new, or in fact, one of the My Bloody Valentine shows the first time around, or one of their reunion shows, like, people were kind of reeling out of those shows with, you know, clutching their heads and eardrums bleeding and stuff. Like, they're incredibly loud and incredibly noisy. So yeah, it's there's definitely some crossover.
Mm-hmm. Well, we mentioned Slow Dive just in passing before, and you know, for these soundcheck guides, we generally like to, you know, not just do the basics, but as we've done, some deeper cuts and a track that kind of shows the darks, you know, when things go off the rails slightly. And actually, we are going to hear a Slow Dive track. Now, this is another great band.
Yeah, definitely.
But what's happening in Souvlaki Space Station, apart from a ridiculous title?
I mean, the title's part of the problem. But honestly, I came to shoegaze kind of late in life. I was a very earnest teenager, and I liked music that had kind of capital L lyrics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a big fan of this band, Manic Street Preachers, and Richie Edwards, who was the guitarist, once said, you know, I hate Slow Dive more than I hate Hitler. and I think what people came to resent about the movement and...
So you just had to figure out, what is this Slow Dive that he hates even more than
absolutely.
Hitler?
Absolutely. And it does have a tendency to disappear up its own rear end at times. and I think this song, you know, for all that it's not a terrible song, it does embody that. I mean, you're calling the song Souvlaki Space Station, and it's... Yeah,
you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
The band is Slow Dive from their 1993 record Outside Your Room. Slow Dive, a song called, unfortunately, Souvlaki Space Station from their 1993 record Outside Your Room. We're talking about the shoegaze movement, big in the late 80s, early 90s, then sort of disappeared, as Tom Hawking has told us, only to come back with a real vengeance in the last couple of years. Now, you mentioned this term newgaze, spelled N-U-gaze. Who were some examples of that?
I would cite The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, definitely. There was also School of Seven Bells, although sadly Ben Curtis died, so they're no longer performing. And then there's bands from all around the world. There's a great band out of Australia, out of my home country, called Low Tide. I can't claim to know a great deal about them, to be honest. I put out the word to my kind of shoegaze nerd friends in Australia, look, you know, who's good these days? And they pretty much unanimously told me that we should listen to Low Tide, so... Listen to Low Tide, we shall.
All right. Underneath Tonight is the name of the song. Tom, thanks very much for being with us.
Such a pleasure, man.
That does it for today's show. Remember, you can explore our archives of live performances and interviews on soundcheck.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Soundcheck to get the latest updates about live webcasts, music news, and more. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.